Good morning and welcome to the March 9th, 2021 hearing of the House Education Finance Committee. Remote hearings such as this are held in accordance with House Rule 10.01. This rule has been posted online and is linked to in our public meeting notice on the House website. All remote hearings will be recorded and live streamed by House Public Information Services. Members have the contents of their virtual packets available to them, and for the public, these materials have been posted online. Members, if you're looking for all these items in one place, they're attached in the calendar event you have that Ms. Burt sent for today. To get on the list to be recognized by the chair, members using the Zoom interface have the ability to raise their hand via the app. Ms. Burt will place your name on the list to be recognized. Ms. Sunderland, would you please call the roll?
Chair Dabney.
Present.
Vice Chair Sandsted.
Present.
Representative Kreisha.
Present.
Representative Bennett.
Present.
Representative Daniels.
Present.
Representative Damith.
Present.
Representative Drazkowski.
Present.
Representative Erickson.
Present.
Representative Feist.
Present.
Representative Jordan.
Present.
Representative Marquardt.
Present.
Representative Mueller.
Present.
Representative Richardson.
Present.
Representative Thompson.
Thompson, present.
Representative Wolgamott. He is excused, but he will be joining us later. Representative Zhang.
Present.
And Representative Joachim.
Present.
Perfect. That is the roll, and we do have a quorum.
Thank you, Ms. Sunderland. Representative Mueller, have you had the opportunity to review the minutes from our Thursday, March 4th meeting? And if so, would you like to move approval of those minutes?
I have, and I wish to move those, Chair.
Thank you very much. Any discussion to the Mueller amendment, or excuse me, Mueller motion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the Mueller motion approving the minutes from Thursday, March 4th, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Mueller. Members, the chair is aware that we have a floor session at noon. Our goal will be to finish up then this committee just a few minutes earlier than usual to allow members the chance to transition to that meeting. It's just different from having to run across the street, but people still need an opportunity to transition. We'll be hearing two bills today, House File 917 and House File 945. First up is House File 917. Members, our intention is to lay this bill over for possible inclusion. We'd like to be done with this one by 10:55 this morning. Representative Sandsted, would you like to make a motion to move House File 917 before the committee and to lay it over for possible inclusion or further consideration at a later date?
Mr. Chair, I would like to move House File 917 before the committee to be included as possibly included in a future bill at a later date.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Representative Sandsted, with that, you may proceed with introducing your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Today, I am presenting House File 917. This is an issue that has been around for a very long time, and I know many of you have already heard about it, so I will be brief. School transportation funding is based on per pupil units and not actual miles driven. We allocate 4.66% on the formula to schools for their transportation costs. When they changed funding back in 1997 to a formula, they also created sparsity categorical to help offset deficits some schools still incurred. That categorical, however, did not cover the full costs of transportation for around 80 districts across the state. In 2017, Representative Detmer, chief authored legislation to create a second categorical to start and address that problem. He was able to get $4 million appropriated to the second categorical. That appropriation covered roughly 18% of the deficits those school districts still incurred. While that was a good start, it really wasn't It didn't go far enough for some school districts to cover their transportation costs. This results in schools having to take money from their general fund to get kids to school. This takes money away from the classroom, and that's problematic. Through the hard work of Forest Lake and Bemidji school districts, this issue was finally brought to statewide attention. The Education Funding Working Group from last year took a look at the issue and made a recommendation to increase the second sparsity categorical from 18.2% up to 70% of a district's deficit. That is the language which is in my bill. And while this still won't make the remaining districts with deficits whole, it is at least a step in the right direction towards equity. With me today is Tim Lutz, superintendent from Bemidji Area Schools, and Larry Martini, the business manager for Forest Lake Area Schools, to give brief testimony to help answer any questions the committee may have. And with that, Mr. Chair, I would stand for questions.
Thank you, Representative Sandsteed. Mr. Lutz, Superintendent Lutz, excuse me, would you please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Tim Lutz. I'm the superintendent for the Bemidji Area School District. And I've been with the district for 3 years now, and this is my 13th year as a superintendent overall. I would like to thank Representative Sandsteed for chief authoring this legislation. She described the issue very well, and I'm just going to give a little bit of testimony on how this deficit affects the Bemidji School District, if I may. At this point in time, I would like to share my screen and show you what our district looks like. But before I move on, can I confirm that you can see the screen, please? Thank you.
Yes, we can.
Thank you very much. This is our district. Our district is in Bemidji, over 825 square miles. As you look at the map of this district, it is overlaid on the metro area. And this is also in committee packets, so you can follow along. This gives you a little bit of perspective on just how large our district is in Bemidji. We have over 70 buses that drive over 1 million miles a year. Our average bus ride is between 1.5 to 2 hours in length, morning and afternoon. Some of our students are on the bus for 2.5 hours each way. I would also like to point out, in the very middle of the map is a square outlined by black lines. You can see Lake Bemidji in the middle of that. One of the challenges that we have is that we can't drive over lakes. We have to drive around them, and that adds to the number of miles we need to drive every year. I would also like to point out that it says Richfield in the middle there. Richfield, that is the size of their school district boundaries. And you can see that it's inlaid within that square box, which is the Bemidji city proper. But the perspective in the overall size of Bemidji from Albertville in the northwest all the way down to Rosemount in the southeast gives you a sense of just how many miles we need to drive and how sparsely populated we are. The other thing I would like to point out about Richfield being much smaller is that a great big portion of that school district is the airport. And there are no students anymore who live in the Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport. So the Richfield ridership is perhaps about 20%, 15 to 20% of what Bemidji's is, just to give you a sense of perspective. Because we're such a large district and have fewer students, we end up with a deficit of roughly $800,000 every year. This is an incredible hit to our budget and dramatically affects our programs and staffing each and every year. And I feel this is really, it boils down to being a serious equity issue for our students and families. Districts shouldn't have to use general funds or classroom dollars to subsidize transportation to get students to school. And that's exactly what we're doing, taking money out of the classroom to be able to subsidize our transportation department. It was especially hard this last year because we needed to continue running our full bus routes, even though we were in hybrid mode for our secondary students at the middle and high school, as well as other duties during the pandemic. So we're simply drowning, and all we're asking is to be made whole. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm available for questions.
Thank you, Superintendent Lutz. Appreciate your time here today. Next testifier is Larry Martini, business manager with the Forest Lake Public Schools. Mr. Martini, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Larry Martini. I'm the business manager for Forest Lake Area Schools since 2001. I also want to thank Representative Sandsteed, Representative Detmer, and all the other people who have helped try to solve this problem over the years. Superintendent Lutz has been at this for 3 years, but many of you may remember seeing me or Superintendent Massey or others from Forest Lake testifying on this issue in one form or another for almost a decade. Bemidji's an example of how this affects a rural district, but I'm here to bring a different perspective. Forest Lake Area Schools is just 25 miles north of St. Paul, yet we have a district that is 220 square miles. With our pupil count, we run a deficit of roughly 300 to 500 million a year, that's million per year, for regular busing. We also own our own buses, and this year we actually had to defer purchasing new buses in order to save money and hope the ones we have will hang on just a little bit longer. We could go on, but I know the committee has a lot of work to do today. I just want to thank the committee and all of the people who have worked on this over the years. This has always had bipartisan support and does so again this year. With that, I can stand for questions, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Martini. Mr. Strom, you prepared runs projecting the impact of this bill. Can you walk the committee through those runs, please?
Mr. Chair, members, Ms. Burt will put those on the screen for you. Essentially what happens, as the testifiers have said, is that for this adjustment, the second part of the transportation sparsity formula, a computation is made of the district's to and from school expenses. So that's not all of a school district's expenses, but that's the to and from expenses. And then a simulated revenue amount is made, which combines the transportation sparsity revenue from the sparsity formula, adds to that a small adjustment for the open enrollment in charter school kids, and then adds 4.66% of the formula money. And the reason for adding that is Representative Sandsted mentioned back in 1997, the legislature decided to roll transportation funding out of its separate fund and its separate categorical program into the basic revenue. So $166 or $170, which was 4.66% of the formula, was added to each district's revenue back then. So the calculation takes that 4.66% plus those other two transportation factors and calculates a difference. And then it's on that difference that the transportation sparsity revenue adjustment is made. And as Representative Sandsted said, that difference currently is funded at 18.2%, and under House File 917, that would go to 70%. So you can see the current baseline transportation in the second to left column of $71.5 million. Under House File 917, that would increase to $80.7 million. And that's a $10 increase on average per district. The $9.1 million is $10 on average. As you look up and down that list, you can see it varies pretty dramatically. So if Ms. Burt would scroll down to the Bemidji School District, which is District 31, you can see that funding 70% of their deficit would bring the district an additional $319,000, or roughly $58 per pupil. And then if we were to scroll down to the 830s for the Forest Lake District and the other districts on the second to last page, maybe, or third to last page, you'll see the same number for the Forest Lake School District, what 70% means for them. So we'll be to that in just a second here. You'll see the amounts vary as we're going through the list by district. The transportation sparsity formula, as the members mentioned, works well for districts that are truly sparse when measured on a total enrollment basis. But for those districts like Forest Lake and Bemidji, where there are a large number of students but tightly compacted, The sparsity formula doesn't work as well because there are many kids in the greater parts of those districts that are sparsely located and need busing, but the total number of kids isn't particularly sparse in those districts. Ms. Burt's showing you the Forest Lake District number 831, and you can see there that according to the current information we have on expenditures, about $113,000 additionally would go to the Forest Lake School District under this proposal. So that, Mr. Chair, is a very brief summary of the printout that's in your packet.
Thank you very much, Mr. Strom. Member questions? Representative Erickson, I see you have your hand raised. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Superintendent Lutz, this increase would bring you X number of thousands of dollars. What would you still be unable to take care of? Because this is not to 100%, this is, I guess, to 70%. So what do you, I guess my question is, what do you then pull back on in the regular classroom or in our learning teaching mode to cover those costs? What happens?
Superintendent Lutz.
Thank you for your question, Representative Erickson. In an ideal world, we'd be asking for 100%. And have everything covered, but additional will help us quite a bit, but we'll still be a good $450,000 in the red, even after this bill, if it were to pass and go into law. For us, we would continue to do what we've had to do for the last 10 or 15 years, which is to do our best to manage a budget by subsidizing from the general fund to pay off the transportation shortfalls every year. The problem with that is our general fund has been shrinking every single year. And now with COVID hitting us, the pandemic, we have ended up with a very severe shortfall. And this year we are looking at cutting $5.5 million out of our $70 million budget. So between the constant 10-year battle of dealing with shortfalls with a lot of other areas, from special education to transportation, to dealing with the pandemic, we're really being hit hard this year. We'll just have to continue to look at areas that we can cut to continue to balance the budget.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So Superintendent Lutz, from your perspective, the most effective way to help you this year would be to put dollars on the per pupil formula. Would that be the best advantage for you to maybe stay away from having to reduce your budget by so much and maybe to cover some of these other costs?
Superintendent Lutz.
Sorry. Yes, indeed, Representative Erickson. I think that for us, the lowest hanging fruit and the most realistic way to approach our shortfalls is to do this addition to the student formula when it applies to transportation. Yes, indeed.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just want to thank you, Superintendent Lutz. I was able to visit Bemidji a few years ago. We were up on a family vacation, and I wanted to check out your busing situation because I'd heard so much about it, and I think you had another appointment, but I was very well taken care of by your colleagues, and the one thing that really stuck out to me was the map that you showed us and the massive amounts of ground you have to cover to pick up students. They had also mentioned concern too that you also have to service students that are in private schools as well as charter schools. So that kind of adds to your burden. And then if I can remember right, seeing the wear and tear on the vehicles, not just from the distance, but also from the fact that you don't have a bus barn to park them all in and how quickly a bus becomes old. I think it was like 10 years. I mean, it was a very short amount of time. So I can see where this would really help. I just want to make sure I understood too, did I hear you say that like having the money on the formula for this sparsity aid would probably be the quickest way for you to kind of recover around this? And what are some of your plans to help? I know you were constantly re-looking at the way you could do routing. The lack of being able to hire bus drivers is a big thing. What are some of the other challenges that you're facing that we may need to still continue to look at when it comes to having districts like yours where you have sparsity everywhere except in a few dense populations and have so much ground to cover. Because I can't imagine going from, what was it, Albertville out to Stillwater and down to Rosemont and then Shakopee and back. So there's a question in there somewhere. Pick and choose whichever one you'd like to answer.
Superintendent Lutz, you apparently have been given the floor.
Thank you, Chair Dabney, and thank you for your question. We are doing everything we can to try to figure out ways to economize our transportation situation. We have one school that is 19 miles out north of town, another school that's about 10 miles west of town, and short of closing those schools, which we just can't do, what we have to do is try to economize in other areas. And our transportation director and his team are very good at what they do with their software and their routing. We have a number of bus drivers who live pretty far out of town who have routes that serve the area where and near where they live, so they can actually take their buses home and not have to what's called deadhead empty all the way back into town. That's one of the issues with transporting students. Unlike transporting in a semi where you're carrying cargo and you can take a load to Florida and then a load back from Florida or Alabama back to Minnesota, you're always going one way empty. Empty in the morning going out, empty back in the afternoon, and that's a challenge. But we're doing our best to figure out ways to maximize our efficiencies with those situations and trying to do our best in terms of filling our school buses. And of course, with the pandemic, that was impossible and made the situation much more worse this year than it ever has been, because we've only had 50% capacity while still having to run our entire routes to pick up students in all four corners of our district. So we're doing everything we can. As you said, we don't have a bus barn or a bus field. So when it's a very, very cold day, sometimes we end up having to replace 20 batteries at a couple hundred dollars each. So the costs are indeed astronomical. And wherever we can, we try to save and to create economies of scale as much as possible. I hope there was an answer somewhere in there for your question. Thank you.
Representative Joachim?
Yes, thank you. I just wanted to have that overall picture painted. It really is a challenge for your district, and I'm assuming the same as Forest Lake. I'm sorry if I didn't get a chance to visit yours as well, but thank you so much.
Thank you. Seeing no other questions from members, Representative Sandstead, any closing comments?
Mr. Chair, I think there's a question from Representative Thompson.
Oh, my apologies. Representative Thompson, thank you for that, Representative Sandstead.
Thank you, Chair. Just real quick, when we're talking about the cargo, and I realize we have some real precious cargo on the buses and those babies. But I missed something, Chair. I just wanted to just clarify for my notes. The superintendent said that in some instances, the kids would be on the bus for a couple of hours. And I can imagine that in some of these winter storms also. I just wanted to know what created, I wanted to write that down. Like, why would that be that kids would be on the bus for hours? I missed something.
Superintendent Lutz, what's a Bemidji perspective?
Yes, thank you for your question, Representative Thompson. I think that it's simply by virtue of the fact that we have 825 square miles. So when we have a bus driver who goes out to roughly 18, 20, 25 miles northwest of town or northeast of town, because of the circuitous routes as well around lakes and on minimum maintenance roads, there is no ability to go the way the crow flies, if you will. So we have a lot of very roundabout routes, and students who are 18 or 20 or 25 miles away from their schools get picked up. And then slowly, as we take the slow route back into town, it's not the express route, other students are picked up on side roads here and side roads there and cul-de-sacs here and there, because of the fact that they're sparsely populated and in very far reaches of the district. By the time they get back to our central routing area, then they get off the bus and get onto another bus that takes them specifically to their particular school. By the time all is said and done, it can be between an hour and a half and 2 hours for some of those students who live in the farthest reaches of our geography. I hope that answered your question.
Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, that did answer my question. Thank you.
A little different than St. Paul.
Yes.
Although I do know in the central cities, sometimes the bus rides can be lengthy, primarily because of traffic. It's not the miles is a different question. The congestion, the traffic congestion, can add to the kids' time on the bus. But before we start telling stories, Representative Sanseed, would you please rescue us with some closing comments on your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just would like to encourage everybody's support in this. I appreciate you hearing the bill. I know that this committee works so hard to help school districts do right by their students. And all the work that we do, the great work that we do, really will be for naught if we can't even get our students into the building in the first place. And these school districts are really struggling in very difficult times because of the cost of transportation. So this would be a great way of investing in our students and making it possible for our school districts to make choices that really will benefit the students in the long run. So thank you for hearing the bill, and I appreciate your support.
With that, Representative Sanseed renews her motion that House File 917 be laid over for possible inclusion in a future bill. Thank you, Representative Sanseed. Members, next up we have House File 945. We will be voting on this bill today, and we will look to take action. In fact, we will take action no later than 11:55. Representative Joachim, would you like to make a motion to move House File 945 before the committee with a recommendation we refer it to the Human Services Finance and Policy Committee?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move House File 945 before the committee today with the recommendation that it be voted on and moved over to the Human Service Finance and Policy Committee.
Thank you very much. With that, Representative Joachim, please proceed with your introduction of your bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members, for hearing House File 945 today. I know members on this committee are familiar with the special ed cross-subsidy and the challenges our schools districts face funding required special education services. This bill will help mitigate a small portion of that gap. Currently, there are a variety of services that a school district can bill Medicaid for when providing for students who have a disability in an IEP that requires health-related services in order to benefit from special education, and then they're also eligible for the Minnesota Healthcare Program. These services include things like occupational therapy, speech, language, and hearing services, as well as therapeutic services and supports. Licensed school social workers can also currently bill for the evaluations and reevaluations they do for students, but not for the actual services they provide due to these outcome of these evaluations. This bill would allow for reimbursement by medical assistance of a licensed school social worker service, of a licensed school social work services based on a student's IEP if the services are provided by an individual who holds a master's degree in social work, is licensed by the Board of School Work, is licensed by PALSBY as a school social worker, and currently holds an independent clinical social worker license from the Board of School Social Work, or holds a graduate social worker or independent social worker license and is supervised by a licensed independent clinical social worker. And don't worry, that's a lot of words, but they're all on the brief from nonpartisan staff. Other states have allowed these types of services to be billable to Medicaid. And this is what's important. They've been able to bring additional federal money into their state in order to further serve their students. This bill would allow Minnesota to tap into those funds that have been left on the table. Funds that could directly support our students who have the most needs. So I have two folks here today that can further highlight the need for this legislation and explain it a lot better than I just did. I've got Kathy Danes, who's the manager of social work services from the Minneapolis Public Schools, and Scott Hare, the director of special services from Mankato Public Schools. And I believe Mr. Scott Hare might be going first.
Oh, all right. Thank you very much, Representative Joachim. Mr. Hare. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Yes, I am Scott Hare. I'm the Director of Student Support Services for Mankato Area Public Schools. I'm also a past president of the Minnesota Association for Special Education Administrators. Thank you, Chair and board members, for allowing me to testify today on such an important bill. I could go on and on in regards to the value social workers bring every single day. In fact, this is social worker week, so I acknowledge the value of what they bring to our district and all the districts in the state of Minnesota. I'm fortunate to have an incredible group of social workers in this district. They provide individual and group work for students in the areas of socially emotional learning, building resiliency, dealing with students that have to deal with trauma, and COVID has magnified that issue in our schools today. They work with our families. They collaborate with our community resources to find ways to get the families the needs that they have, specifically if we have families that are homeless. I want to tell you a little bit about a story in regards to an email I received 2 weeks ago from one of my teachers. This teacher is what we call a setting three behavior teacher. So the students in her classroom predominantly are self-contained because of the areas they're working on in terms of their social, emotional, and behavioral needs. So I'm sitting and reading this email, and she's begging me to keep the social worker that we assigned to all of our setting three elementary programs. It was a pilot site we started 2 years ago. So setting three, we want students to get into a less restrictive environment, but we also want to try to keep them from going to a more restrictive environment, which means they would go to an off-site school. This teacher in her email talked about the value this social worker provided in the area of social emotional learning, providing mental health strategies, building resiliency, and then also collaborating with the families as well as other teachers in the school. I can proudly say in 2 years, because of this social worker and the valiant efforts of her collaboration with our special ed teachers, we have not moved a student out of our elementary buildings to a more restrictive environment. This social worker has provided the mental health that these students needed. Now, we are not trying to take money away from other mental health providers. We're only trying to add to the service that they provide. For instance, in Mankato, we have school-linked mental health, and I know that there have been grants and money put aside for that. Thank you very much. They have helped. Our school-linked mental health come in one day a week to provide services for anywhere from 5 to 7 students. We have them in almost every one of our schools, but we have waiting lists in every one of our schools also to get those services. We also have a relationship with Prairie Care, which is a mental health day program, which we provide the education for. So we have done every single thing we can as a district to provide mental health support for our students, and it's still not enough. Our social workers on a daily basis provide those services, but we're unable to bill for them. Speaking in terms of budget, and I know Superintendent Lutz talked a little bit about this in the previous testimony, the crossover subsidy for our district is approximately $7 million. We built quite a bit for Medicaid when we can in this district, but because of COVID last year going into this year, we are going to lose about $800,000 in medical assistance billing. So put that on top of the $7 million crossover subsidy. On top of that, our district has to cut $7 million from its budget this year. $7 million. So as a district, we're trying to do everything we can to bring extra additional revenue into our district to provide those mental health services to our students, and our social workers do that every single day. And in closing, I'm very thankful for everything you can do for our students in providing mental health support. This is one additional avenue to bring resources in to either retain social workers or to add more social workers to our districts to provide those valuable resources. Thank you.
Chair Devney, you're muted.
How did that happen? Thank you for that, Mr. Hare. Ms. Daines, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Chairman Devney and committee members. I am Kathy Dalmas. I am the manager of social work services in the Minneapolis schools. I have been a Minnesota school social worker for 30 years. I am a licensed clinical social worker and licensed by the Board of Education. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today on behalf of House File 945. Research shows the need for school mental health services has continually increased, and especially now, at this time in our state and country, our students' mental health needs demand our support and intervention. We are navigating through a pandemic and racial injustice, and our children and our adolescents are experiencing trauma, toxic stress, grief and loss, anxiety, depression. School mental health teams across the state are caring for the mental health needs of our students each day and at the same time constantly navigating how to fully fund these vital services. We are asking to access federal Medicaid funds for some of these services, subset of services, services for students on an IEP with mental health related needs that where we've identified mental health social work services on the IEP to be provided by LICSWs, clinical social workers, or social workers being supervised towards their LICSW. To maximize federal reimbursement, Minnesota requires school districts to seek medical assistance reimbursement for health-related services that are provided as part of the individual education plan, the IEP. Medicaid is the primary payer for IEP health-related services in the schools, yet schools are failing to access these federal Medicaid funds. Furthermore, schools are drawing down their educational funds to provide these services, adding to the cross-subsidy. District participation in federal Medicaid reimbursement is through the current CTSS system to support mental health needs of students, and that has really decreased in Minnesota due to the burden of additional paperwork over and above what is already required for special education. This bill does not suggest that schools would seek Medicaid reimbursement through the CTSS program, but rather it would allow schools to receive federal reimbursement through the IEP IFSP process. By allowing mental health services provided by school social workers who are clinical social workers or receiving supervision towards their clinical license on an IEP to be reimbursed through MA, House File 945 gives districts access to essential revenue to help increase equitable services and provide comprehensive school-based mental health supports. Similar services, speech language, occupational and physical therapy, school nurse services are all reimbursable through Medicaid for eligible students where the IEP comprehensive eval has determined the medical necessity and they are now billing for services they provide in schools. You can review the attachments, I believe you've been sent for more information on that. While school social work services are included under Minnesota statute as a health-related service that can bill MA, our current practice in Minnesota does not allow for districts to bill for these social work services. School social workers provide consistent and reliable access for students to address their physical and behavioral health, but can't leverage these Medicaid funds now. We do bill for the evals, but not for the services that have been identified in the IEP. Just to throw out some numbers in terms of money, Wisconsin, Illinois, and Iowa do allow reimbursement for social work services. Wisconsin generates about $8 million annually in federal reimbursement. Illinois estimates they receive between $15 and $20 million annually. Michigan generates $45 million. Minnesota only generates $3 million. It's estimated this bill would possibly funnel in over $10 million into school districts of Minnesota each year. These funds are federal dollars that have been and are being left on the table. It is not in any way taking any funds from another Minnesota program or service to pay for another. It's an attempt to bring in millions of federal dollars into our schools. So in closing, Minnesota School Social Work Association urges you to support House File 945, which would ensure that school districts across the state could access essential revenue to support some of our most vulnerable students. It's an opportunity for Minnesota to enact an economically equitable solution for the social, emotional, and health stability for many of our children. Thank you for your time and support of this bill, Representative Dabney, Chairman Dabney.
Ms. Dulnes, thank you, and apologies for mispronouncing your name earlier. Members, opportunity for questions. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Dulnes, did you say that Minnesota would receive $10 million, or were you talking about Minneapolis School District?
Minnesota, excuse me.
So why would Minnesota's be lower than some of the states that you referred to?
Ms. Dulnes.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. I'm going to defer to my colleague, Scott. He's much more knowledgeable, I think, about some of those numbers and billing in terms of comparing to the other states. We've just collected that data from the other states and, why did you say, why would we be less than, for example, Michigan?
Yes.
My belief it would
be, Mr. Hare?
Yes, thank you, Hare. My belief would be depending on the services we provide on an IEP that are listed as mental health compared to other states. So if you ran the numbers, we'd have to go currently what is listed as a service on an IEP. And so some of those services might have to change the way we put them on an IEP to make it more billable. But when you compare state to state, everybody uses different lingo in terms of billing language. And also would be based on the child count that we have in Minnesota compared to child count in Illinois. Chicago Public Schools, for instance, or Detroit Public Schools would have a large child count. So running child count numbers across the different states would also play into that. But I think the biggest thing would be when districts take on third-party billing, we have a third-party billing specialist in our district. She guides our teams on to use the appropriate language to put in an individual education plan to make it a billable service, because if we don't do that, we can't bill for it. And so we would have to do some coaching to all of our teachers, because this would be a new service we bill for, that we would have to do that. And I believe we could maybe even eventually get more than $10 million.
Thank you, Mr. Hare. Representative Erickson?
Mr. Chair, that was very well explained by Mr. Hare, because you know, it often is about the terminology that you use to get that reimbursement. And that could reduce our special education costs possibly too, if we're using the right language to recover those costs. So thank you very much. That was very good to know.
Interesting point, Representative Erickson, on reducing the special education cross subsidy with this as a strategy. Other questions from members? It would appear, Mr. Hare, that was such a solid explanation, you've eliminated the need for questions. Well done. You're welcome back to committee any time. Representative Joachim, do you have any closing comments?
Thank you. I do want to apologize for mispronouncing Ms. Dulness's name wrong as well. Madam Chair, members, thank you for your time, questions. And this is a bill that's still being worked on. We have some work to do with DHS as well, but I will be continuing to work with all the stakeholders on it. Thank you for hearing this bill during Social Worker Week. Social workers play an intricate role in all parts of our children's education. While this bill focuses in on just our kiddos with special needs, social workers work with our entire school population, and they make our learning environment safe, happy, and healthy. Currently, licensed social workers can bill Medicaid for the evaluations and re-evaluations they do for students who qualify for special education service. This bill would allow those same licensed social workers to bill Medicaid for the services they provide due to the outcome of those evaluations. So I would appreciate your support as we move this bill to Human Service Finance Policy, and thank you.
Thank you, Representative Joachim. And with that, Representative Joachim renews her motion to refer House File 945 to the Human Services Finance and Policy Committee. Ms. Sunderland, will you please take the roll?
Chair Dabney.
Chair votes aye.
Vice Chair Sandsted.
Aye.
Representative Kreisha.
Pass.
Representative Bennett.
Pass.
Representative Daniels.
Pass.
Representative Damon.
Pass.
Representative Drazkowski.
No.
Representative Erickson.
Pass.
Representative Feist.
Aye.
Representative Jordan. Representative Jordan. Representative Marquardt. Representative Marquardt, you cut out there.
Marquardt, aye.
Perfect. Representative Mueller.
Mueller, pass.
Representative Richardson.
Aye.
Representative Thompson.
Aye.
Representative Wolgamott.
Wolgamott, aye.
Representative Zhang.
Aye.
Representative Joachim.
Aye.
And Representative Jordan. That is nine.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Kreshaw, we're in a roll call right now. Do you wish to change your vote?
No, my apologies. My internet had cut out, so I didn't know what we were voting on. So by saying pass, I was waiting for it to come around, and I think my side is following my lead. So now that my internet is back, I can correct that. But it was a technical issue, and I just wanted to make sure that I let everybody know what happened.
So let me thank you for that clarification, Representative Kreshaw. Let me,
Mr. Chair,
reframe my question. This is House File 945. The Joachim motion is to move the bill to Human Services Finance and Policy. Do you wish to change your vote?
Mr. Chair, I will change my vote to a yes.
All right. Ms. Sunderland, will you please call the names of those members who passed in the first roll call, providing them the opportunity to change their vote if they so choose?
Will do. Representative Kreshaw.
Kreshaw votes aye.
Representative Bennett.
Aye.
Representative Daniels.
Aye.
Representative Damon.
Damon votes aye.
Representative Erickson. Representative Erickson.
Oh, I vote aye.
Sorry, I didn't hear you there. Representative Mueller.
Mueller votes yes.
All right, so with the new total, that provides us with 15 ayes and one no.
All right, thank you very much, Ms. Sunderland. With that, Representative Joachim, you are on your way to Human Services, Finance, and Policy. And members, thank you very much for the meeting today. We are adjourned.